It was a unique show during a unique time in television. It featured gross-out humor, wacky comedy, and even green slime. The little show that began in Canada was instrumental in the growth of one of the biggest children's television channels in existence. The show, which started out extremely low budget, even featured a young performer who would go on to become one of the most famous musical artists of our modern time. I'm Jamie Logie, and this is Everything 80s, a podcast that looks back on a decade that forever changed the way we dress, consume, and connected. And if you grew up with it, you know that saying the phrase, "I don't know," leads to something unfortunate. It's a show with a legacy that continues to this very day. This is the history of You Can't Do That on Television. The story of You Can't Do That on Television is also the story of the rise of cable TV. I have a previous episode all about this, but the rise of cable TV goes back to the 1970s, when channels like the Turner Broadcasting System, or TBS, became one of the first basic cable channels. Then came some premium channels like Showtime and the home box office, or HBO. Through the 70s and into the 80s, other cable channels appeared, such as the Cable News Network, or CNN, the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network, or ESPN, and MTV. And then in 1979 came the network named after the 5-cent movies of yesteryear. Those Odeons from the early 1900s only cost a nickel, giving birth to the name of a brand new network, Nickelodeon, the first pay TV channel for kids. Cable had split into basic and premium channels, and going into the 80s, channels began to run for 24 hours a day. A big focus with the premium channels was on quality children's programming. The very first original series on Showtime was a children's show called Fairy Tale Theater. Created by Shelley Duvall, the quite creative show featured the who's who of famous performers acting out classic children's stories. That debuted in 1982, and the next year came an original show co-produced by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation and aired on HBO. It was a show about an underground species of creature. Fraggle Rock first debuted in 1983. There seemed to be a connection between Canada, premium American cable channels, and shows for kids. And this may have all been set in motion a few years earlier. And we need to take a quick trip back to early 1979. On Saturday morning, February 3rd, 1979, a lower-budget children's show aired in Ottawa, Canada, on CJOH-TV. It was the brainchild of Roger Price, and he, along with Jeffrey Darby, had come up with a unique hour-long kids' variety show. The show featured comedy sketches, live games, music videos, and call-in segments. The unique show also came with a risque and intriguing sounding name, You Can't Do That on Television. Another unique feature of this show is the fact it was live. The show featured some unknown child actors along with adult hosts. The first is Christine McGlade, who served as a host for the show. The other host was the original adult on the show, Les Lai. Lai, from Toronto, worked in radio and eventually alongside the legendary Rich Little before getting into the new world of television. Lai was part of a kids' show called Uncle Willie and Floyd that aired on CJOH-TV in Ottawa. As shared on the You Can't Do That on Television website, the kids' variety show was quite successful in its first year. And as the name of the show implies, younger viewers tuned in to see things that shouldn't be on TV. But the intended audience wasn't for audiences that were too young. Older kids and younger teens were the targeted demographic. What made the show unique was that it was always different. It was a little like The Muppet Show, SCTV, Saturday Night Live, or even Monty Python, but for younger viewers. Eventually, the show would feature a theme that ran throughout the episode. The show covered topics like school, cooking, fashion, and parents, and spoke to what kids of a certain age were experiencing. But this was still a wacky slapstick show, including its most unique feature, green slime. Green slime would be dumped on a performer's head from high up above, covering the performer and often splashing everywhere. And its creation was an accident. The story goes that the original plan was to dump leftover cafeteria food mixed with water onto someone's head. The debut of the show was delayed for a week, and the mix of food and water that had been sitting around had grown mold and turned into a green sludge. According to Vox, instead of mixing a new batch, they just went ahead and used the moldy slop in a sketch set in a dungeon. The character getting slopped was a huge hit with the audience. And that very first person to be slimed, Tim Douglas. The idea of sliming was so quickly popular that by the seventh show, the entire episode was devoted to sliming. Every cast member was slimed, including performer Lisa Ruddy, who was slimed six times. This episode fully established green slime on You Can't Do That on Television, along with using the phrase, "I don't know," as the trigger, creating a true pop culture institution. But they stopped using moldy food, and the show created their own green slime. Over the years, versions of the slime were made up of oatmeal and green dye. Some used cottage cheese, or a combination of cream of wheat, green food coloring, and baby shampoo. In an interview with Tech Insider, Mark Summers from Nickelodeon shared that one iteration of green slime was made with vanilla pudding, applesauce, green food coloring, and a little oatmeal. I've definitely eaten worse things than that. You Can't Do That on Television caught on pretty quickly. It had a unique tone to it and felt like it was made by kids for kids. That was always my impression anyway, and it may have been for you too. Even though it featured adults, it didn't feel like an adult-made show that seemed to know what kids wanted to watch. It felt like it tapped right into our minds. The pure intent of You Can't Do That on Television was about entertainment, and that made it a quick success. There was no educational component that can cause kids to quickly turn the channel. If you grew up with Saturday morning cartoons during the 80s, you know this was an education-free morning and all about entertainment. Saturday mornings were like the recess of the weekends. But thanks to its quick success, it carried on. And a spin-off was even created called Whatever Turns You On. This show was pretty much the same as You Can't Do That on Television, but with a few differences. To start, it was only 30 minutes long instead of 60. Instead of being live, it was taped, and they added a laugh track. And also, it was shown during prime time instead of Saturday mornings. According to the show's official website, Whatever Turns You On had horrible ratings and was canceled after one season. but there was a big takeaway from it. Maybe it would be better if You Can't Do That on Television was not live, taped with a laugh track, and only 30 minutes long. And that takes us into 1980, and You Can't Do That on Television just continues to grow in popularity. Another thing that made it unique was it was a show featuring average kids who looked just like your friends. This would be a much different premise than a show like, say, the new Mickey Mouse Club with its squeaky clean and polished performers. You Can't Do That on Television felt more relatable. As we head into 1981, the popularity of the show continues, but this is when things are about to change forever. Going into the 80s, the Nickelodeon channel wasn't necessarily at the elite level of cable channels. They had some popular shows like Pinwheel, kind of a Nickelodeon version of Sesame Street, Livewire, a youth chat show starring Fred Newman, who would go on to be one of the co-hosts of the new Mickey Mouse Club, and another Canadian show created by TV Ontario called Today's Special. But for many people, we were still limited to network TV and the three big networks that dominated our viewing habits. Getting people to pay for additional channels was a tough ask, especially when ABC, NBC, CBS, or here in Canada, CBC, had all the big sitcoms, drama, sports, and movies of the week. According to a 2016 Vulture article, at the start of the decade, fewer than 1 in 5 Americans paid for a basic cable subscription. Why pay for CNN when you had the evening news on the networks? Why pay for ESPN if all the major sports already aired on the networks? But when it came to kids, it was a different story. Kids' programming in the early 80s was limited to select time slots. And the era of after-school cartoons hasn't kicked in quite yet, as the IPs that drove that time slot, G.I. Joe, He-Man, Transformers, Gem and the Holograms, haven't even been created yet. And besides shows like Mr. Rogers, Polka Dot Door, Mr. Dress-Up, and Sesame Street, there wasn't a ton of educational stuff out there. And again, what did exist was still limited to certain times of the day. If you missed Sesame Street or Mr. Rogers, you missed it. With the VCR not commonplace in most homes yet, families didn't have the option of putting on a kid's tape of their favorite shows whenever it was needed. The prospect of an all-day kids channel that provided entertainment and education was quite appealing. But for a channel like this to exist means there's a lot of time slots to fill, which requires a lot of content. Creating and producing original programming is not only expensive, but time-consuming. Maybe a better option is to look for existing programming and just port it over to your channel. This is the approach Nickelodeon took with You Can't Do That on Television. If this show was resonating with a certain age group in Canada, maybe that would translate over to the US. Nickelodeon's goal was to hook young viewers in with a sense of community, more than just being a cable station. Their goal was to be more than just a programming service. And in a 2016 interview with Vulture, Geraldine Laybourn, who would become president of Nickelodeon, says, quote, "Our goal at Nickelodeon had everything to do with the audience. Our mission statement was to connect kids with each other and the world through entertainment. We never thought of ourselves as just a cable network," unquote. You Can't Do That on Television would be a way for the channel to accomplish this goal. And the show soon became one of their breakout hits. In 1982, Nickelodeon became co-producer for You Can't Do That on Television, something HBO would follow with Fraggle Rock. But since You Can't Do That on Television was so unique and clearly resonating with Canadian audiences, Nickelodeon knew not to meddle with it. The show's creators didn't face pressure from the channel or any interference. Their formula worked, and Nickelodeon dared not mess with it. In his 2013 interview with the Toronto Star, performer Adam Reed said Nickelodeon just stayed out of the way. Nickelodeon began with a test run of shows beginning in January 1982. They began with edited half-hour versions of episodes from 1981, and it quickly drew an audience. Production then began on full shows that followed the half-hour format, with the sole focus on comedy. But since it was being aired across the U.S., specific Canadian content that had always been a part of the show was cut out. But now, kids all across America were being introduced to the unique and wacky comedy show and its William Tell Overture-inspired theme song. Nickelodeon already featured a good amount of gentler shows and educational content, but this new show was the exact opposite. You Can't Do That on Television was loud, messy, and chaotic, but these are the exact elements that would go on to define the channel.
Everything 80s will return after these messages.
You Can't Do That on Television was exactly what Nickelodeon needed and at the exact right time. A 1999 New York Times article described the pre-You Can't Do That on Television channel as, quote, the Green Vegetable Network, unquote. It wasn't exactly putting out shows that kids were desperate to watch. In the article, Nickelodeon's vice president and general manager at the time, Seema Zargami, says of the channel back then that, quote, the joke was that our early research showed that kids thought Nickelodeon was like a green vegetable, unquote. The sentiment around the programming was that, quote, just because it's good for kids doesn't mean it's going to taste good, unquote. The channel's new direction and identity was established with You Can't Do That on Television. 1982 is also a significant time in the history of the show, as this is when Abby Haggard joined them. Haggard, originally from Edmonton, joined the show as the other adult performer alongside Les Lye. Haggard would also be involved with some other big 80s kid shows like The Care Bears, Teddy Ruxpin, and Dennis the Menace. But for many kids, this was a dream show. It played to youth sensibilities, including gross-out humor, but didn't talk down to them. And watching people get slimed was an absolute highlight. Many parents were not impressed with it, which made it even more appealing to kids. And since they were a cable channel, Nickelodeon didn't have to answer to the same regulations as network TV. They could pretty much just let it fly. And let it fly, they did. There are sketches like one with my favorite character, Barth the Cook, where Barth serves the kids a cake full of mold and ants, leading to kids vomiting, which he saves and uses for future cake mixes. Bathroom and toilet humor were quite prevalent, and there was a reoccurring sketch involving a firing squad. But it's not like the show was misleading. It was called You Can't Do That on Television, after all. But some things did end up going a bit too far, and a few episodes ended up getting banned. including one about adoption that wasn't tackled in a sensitive manner. Some of the shows from the 1981 season were also pulled from syndication as they dealt with things that were a bit edgy, like drugs, smoking, and dating. But it wasn't all just gross-out humor. Other popular segments included kids in lockers opening the doors to share various stories and jokes. And audiences loved all of it. By 1983, You Can't Do That on Television was the highest rated show on Nickelodeon. And its success led to it being aired 5 days a week. 1984 was a significant year for You Can't Do That on Television. Funnily enough, while the show had become a massive hit in the States, it was the opposite case here in Canada. According to the show's official website, ratings declined so badly here that it was hardly watched. While in the meantime, in the US, it was a ratings behemoth and eventually aired 7 days a week. It wasn't just that the show was a hit for Nickelodeon, but it had become part of the channel's identity. Everything the channel did seemed to have a connection back to You Can't Do That on Television. Any promotional material related to Nickelodeon, regardless of the show, incorporated the green slime into its logos and advertising. With the increased success and subscribers, Nickelodeon wanted to branch beyond just the channel. A line of products connected to You Can't Do That on Television were released, including green slime, and you may remember, green slime shampoo and soap.
Introducing You Can't Do That on Television Green Slime Shampoo. It gets you clean, it won't turn you green. It looks like green slime, but with one big difference. It's shampoo. Just say those three little words.
I don't know.
And go from stringy, slimy hair to silky, shiny hair.
Building on the success of You Can't Do That on Television, Nickelodeon soon opened a combination production studio / tourist attraction at Universal Studios in Florida. There was a comic strip, and then Nick Magazine, which would be released a few years later. But it all comes back to the show, and Nickelodeon needed to keep this hit on top. In the mid-80s, you may remember the Slime In Sweepstakes, a contest created by the channel. Kids across the country sent in postcards hoping to win and get the chance to be slimed on the show. By the early to mid-80s, the success of the show led to a few spin-offs of sorts, including UFO Kidnapped, a show called Don't Look Now, and one called Turkey Television, a show produced by Christine McGlade. McGlade starred in Turkey Television as well, along with Les Lai and some other cast members from You Can't Do That on Television. But because kids are known to grow up and age, they age out of the roles, meaning You Can't Do That on Television featured a revolving cast of performers. And that leads into 1986, another big year in the history of the show. Leaving it that year were Alistair Gillis, who had been there since 1982, and Christine McGlade, who had been there from the start, but was now getting into producing. But then, in 1986, one notable performer made her debut. She came from Ottawa and at a young age started playing the piano and learning to dance. It was while in junior high that she first appeared on You Can't Do That on Television, staying on for several episodes. But music was her true calling. And eventually, the entire world would know her when her breakout album, Jagged Little Pill, became a phenomenal success. A young Alanis Morissette was a performer on You Can't Do That on Television. Also in 1986, Nickelodeon expanded on the slime universe with the introduction of a new show called Double Dare, a game show version of You Can't Do That on Television, if you will. The kids' game show featured trivia, but a lot of physical challenges, all based around the contestants getting as messy as possible, which included a lot of green slime. Because of the gross messiness factor, the show soon went by the name Super Sloppy Double Dare. The Double Dare logo was even set against a backdrop of green slime. The chaotic messiness of You Can't Do That on Television clearly worked, and the concept led well to Double Dare, which actually passed You Can't Do That on Television to become the network's highest rated show. Further proof that in the 80s, if it's gross or smells, it sells. Check out my previous episode about the history of My Pet Monster for some more about all that. But built off the back of You Can't Do That on Television, Double Dare led to its own merchandising phenomenon. Because of the success of the two shows, ratings in the afternoon tripled, and Nickelodeon was one of the most powerful cable channels on TV. Nickelodeon was now more than a channel. It was a full brand. They proved that a specialty-only channel worked, especially for kids. For years, the networks had been hung up on what they called co-viewing. These were shows that appealed to younger viewers without alienating adults. Think something like Different Strokes, Webster, or Family Ties. Nickelodeon showed that kids alone could drive enough viewership for a channel. And speaking of kids' channels, if you grew up in Canada during the 80s, you may have never seen You Can't Do That on Television. If you didn't live in the Ottawa area, you might not have even been aware of it. But that changed in 1988 with the launch of YTV. According to the Toronto Star, this is when the appeal of You Can't Do That on Television broadened within the country it originated from. Up to this point, the kids of the show that were well known by American audiences weren't necessarily as well recognized in their home country. By the end of 1987, after only 5 episodes, Nickelodeon didn't renew the show and creator Roger Price left. That meant there wasn't a new season in 1988. But there would be in 1989, as Price came back along with a whole new cast for a 9th season. Fans call these the new episodes, and they do have a decidedly different feel to them. But that was pretty much the end, as there were only 5 episodes the next year. Reruns aired for a few more years after that, but that was it. And You Can't Do That on Television was off the air. But it was a remarkable legacy for a low-budget, almost cable-access show from Ottawa that spread around the world. I can't tell you how important You Can't Do That on Television was for me. For my sister and I, it was one of those shows that felt like it was made directly for us. I was the right age and of the right mindset to totally be enamored by this show. I saw every episode multiple times, and it shaped a big part of my sense of humor, for better or for worse. But little did I know how significant this wacky show would be in the history of television. Nickelodeon may have set the standard for how pay TV and cable went going forward. Yes, TBS, HBO, and Showtime were there first, but they were all things to all people with a variety of programming. Nickelodeon was the first directed at a specific audience. This was personalized TV, and its early success was built off the back of You Can't Do That on Television. Specialty channels are, of course, the norm now, whether they exist on TV or in streaming form. And Nickelodeon set a standard followed by other channels. In 1983, the Disney Channel arrived. By the end of the decade, the Disney Channel had over 5 million subscribers. And cable TV just continued to grow. At the start of the decade, there were around 19 million households with basic cable. By the end of the 80s, that number was up to 53 million. Cable revenue went from $2.6 billion at the start of the 80s to $18 billion by the end. More and more cable channels began to appear. And for Nickelodeon itself, by 1989, its ratings since 1984 had doubled. A 1989 LA Times article called the channel a stalwart of basic cable TV. Nickelodeon, a channel that began with maybe 600,000 subscribers, now, by the end of the 80s, had 46 million. That was nearly all homes wired with cable. In 1987, revenue hit 59 million. The next year, it was at 90 million. According to Forbes, by 2014, Nickelodeon had nearly 100 million subscribers. Vulture says Nickelodeon, quote, best illustrates how the cable industry waged its successful assault on broadcasters' decades-old hegemony by getting adults to spring for cable, unquote. Today, Nickelodeon is still seen around the world. They've created spin-off channels, resorts, cruises, a motion picture production unit, and are a billion-dollar company. What would Nickelodeon look like today if it wasn't for You Can't Do That on Television? There's no way to know, but the show was a hit for the fledgling network, and the network helped to change the direction for kids' programming and cable forever. And legacy-wise, it's a show that's ingrained in 1980s kids' pop culture. Today, the Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Awards, which dates back to 1987, is still a huge event, with presenters taking part in the great tradition of getting slimed. Entirely new generations of kids who have never seen the show or probably never even heard of You Can't Do That on Television know all about green slime and what being slimed means. The little low-budget show from Ottawa quickly became a beloved part of the 1980s and created an iconic legacy that still exists to this day. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. I have a lot of TV-based previous episodes if you're interested in more like this, but there are a ton of other episodes waiting for you to dive into. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Everything 80s podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on new shows. If you're interested in bonus 1980s content like the Everything 80s movie review podcast, you can consider becoming a member of patreon.com. Speaking of the movie review podcast, I recently released a breakdown of Masters of the Universe from 1987. The fantasy adventure film starring Dolph Lundgren as He-Man was supposed to turn He-Man into the next Star Wars, but that didn't exactly happen. And it also changed the future of movies, specifically superhero movies, forever. If you want to check that out or learn more, you can head on over to patreon.com/80s, that's patreon.com/80s, or click on the link in the description. So thank you again so much for being with me here today and listening to this show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Jamie. This has been Everything 80s, but I'll be back soon with a new episode. Don't you dare miss it.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.